Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 31, Text 42. Tam Atmano Vijaniya.
Tam Atmano Vijaniya.
Pachya Apachya Grihatmakam.
Pachya Apachya Grihatmakam.
Daivo Pashaditam Rityam.
Daivo Pashaditam Rityam.
Rigayo Gayanam Yata.
Rigayo Gayanam Yata.
Tam Atmano Vijani Vijaniya.
Tam Atmano Vijaniya.
Patya Patya Grihatmakam.
Patya Patya Grihatmakam.
Pashaditam Rityam.
Daivo Pashaditam Rityam.
Mrigayo Gayanam Yata.
Mrigayo Gayanam Yata.
Tam Atmano Vijaniyat.
Tam Atmano Vijaniyat.
Kata Patya Grihatmakam.
Patya Patya Grihatmakam.
Daivo Pashaditam Rityam.
Daivo Pashaditam Rityam.
Mrigayo Gayanam Yata.
Mrigayo Gayanam Yata.
Tam.
Tam.
The Lord's Maya.
The Lord's Maya.
Atmana.
Atmana.
Of the self.
Of the self.
Vijaniya.
Vijaniya.
She should know.
She should know.
Pati.
Pati.
Husband.
Husband.
Apatya.
Apatya.
Children.
Children.
Griha.
Griha.
House.
House.
Atmakam.
Atmakam.
Consisting of.
Consisting of.
Deva.
Deva.
By the authority of the Lord.
By the authority of the Lord.
Upashaditam.
Upashaditam.
Brought about.
Brought about.
Nityum.
Nityum.
Death.
Death.
Mrigayo.
Mrigayo.
Of the hunter.
Of the hunter.
Gayanam.
Gayanam.
The singing.
The singing.
Yata.
Yata.
As.
As.
Translation. A woman, therefore, should consider her husband, her house, and her children to be the arrangement of the external energy of the Lord for her death. Just as the sweet singing of the hunter is death for the deer. Please repeat. A woman, therefore, should consider her husband,
her house,
and her children,
to be the arrangement
of the external energy of the Lord.
Of the external energy of the Lord.
For her death.
For her death.
Just as the sweet singing of the hunter.
Just as the sweet singing of the hunter.
Is death for the deer.
Is death for the deer.
Srila Prabhupada gives us a short purport here. In these instructions of Lord Kapiladeva, it is explained that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for women. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to the woman because of her service, her beauty, and many other assets. And similarly, a woman becomes attached to a man for his giving her a nice place to live, ornaments, dress, and children. It is a question of attachment for one another. As long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for the man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious. And then marriage is very nice. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore recommends Anushaktasya Vishayan Yataham Upayunjataha Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagyam Uchate. This is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.2.5.5. Man and woman should live together as householders in relationship with Krishna only for the purpose of discharging duties in the service of Krishna. Engage the children, engage the wife, and engage the husband, all in Krishna conscious duties. And then all these bodily or material attachments will disappear. Since the via medium is Krishna, the consciousness is pure, and there is no possibility of degradation at any time. Om Agyanati Mahandasya Gyana Gyana Salakaya Jashu Unmiritam Jena Tasma Shri. So this is a very sober verse, isn't it? Following after a very sober verse, a living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as the bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. And the verse before, a woman created by the Lord is the representation of Maya. And one who associates with such Maya by accepting services must certainly know that this is the way of death, just like a blind well covered with grass. So how do these verses make you feel? Ladies, gentlemen, how do they make you feel?
Scared.
Huh?
Scared.
Scared. Yes. Anything else? Yes.
Only hope is attachment to Krishna.
Only hope is attachment to Krishna. Anything else?
Fearful.
Fearful. Other people? Similar? Anything? Think what they make you feel when you hear these verses.
Reality.
Reality. Yes.
Disappointed.
Illusion.
Illusion.
What we are
completely trapped.
Be detached.
Need to be detached.
Bhagavatam
is warning us.
Careful.
Careful. So, one part of us, I should say, one part of me feels, thank you, you're giving me a warning. It's very good to be warned. If there's a danger, if the road ahead, if there's some dacoits on the road, some thieves are living in the house on the corner here, I should know it because I might need to go a different route rather than avoid a confrontation. That's one part of me. But another part of me feels like I'm already implicated and committed and involved in this sense of relationship between the male and the female, perhaps in a sanitized way, not in a gross sensual way, but the subtle connections have their part in my life, and what should I do with this? And then the sober, thoughtful part of me says, as some of the devotees said so nicely, you should become detached. And then the other part, the part that's attached, says, well, and gives some good arguments. How could I take care of my family? Am I supposed to just abandon them? They're not all so spiritual as I am. They're not trying to be fully Krishna conscious right now. And probably neither am I, because of their association, or is it they because of my association, or is it the world outside that is actually the threat? I would be quite fixed and focused if I didn't deal with the world. This is the excusing part, the excuses part. And then we come back to the other part, and it says you have to keep working on this. This is very important. The Bhagavatam is telling you something that you won't hear anywhere else. No one else will tell you this. Everyone else will tell you the opposite. You should have a good time. You should enjoy life. You should have as much pleasure as you can out of life. If you don't do that, you're missing out. You're going to waste an opportunity. And so this is actually coming from outside, but then I begin to recognize it also comes from within me. Because we each of us are encased within one of these two forms. Even nowadays they have a middle one, because it's Kali Yuga. So you might have got this one because you were thinking of that one, but now you don't want that one, you want that one, so we'll give you a middle road. It's very strange, because neither way is being recommended as the way out. A male, be male, and disregard the female species, or be female and disregard the male species. Neither of this direction like this is going to actually be effective. So what should I do? Of course I know what I should do. Bhagavatam is telling me. But what should I do when my mind is going this way and this way and this way for countless lifetimes? So the Bhagavatam is giving the actual solution, the real remedy, the perfection of knowledge and the perfection of consciousness. It's presenting to us the truth. And to the degree that we can imbibe that, to that degree we are in harmony with the truth. And to the degree that I'm in harmony with the truth, I'm in harmony with myself on a deep level, because if I'm really somebody and I believe I'm somebody who I really am, then I'm in harmony with myself. If I'm really not the person I believe I am, if I believe I'm very wealthy and I'm not very wealthy, I go out into the world and I feel disturbance many a time because I can't keep up with my impression of myself. And I'm driven by it that I should have more money, and I scheme and plan how to carry out this impression that I have of who I am. And it's very difficult to do that. And most people, you could say everyone on the absolute plane, but most people you see in society are doing that. They have a false impression of who they are, what's their status. We're not even talking on this spiritual level, but simply on the material level. And they're driven by plans that have been dictated from their false intention and impression. And then here's us. And we are coming from out there in here. After the class, we will all walk out the door and Srila Prabhupada and the deities will remain, except for a few fortunate people who will be chanting quietly. So then when we walk out the door, do we bond again with the world surrounding us and its values? Or do we carry with us the impression of the deities as being our real, actual shelter and masters? And Srila Prabhupada's teachings as being our mindset. Here's a big question, don't you think? It's quite a confronting question. And what I see is that in the very beginning of Krishna consciousness, everything seems difficult. It's just too hard because we don't have any momentum yet. Or everything seems so easy because we think, I can do that, that's easy. And not only is it easy, within the next probably 5 or 10 years, I'm going to be right up there with the topmost everybody. And so in a corporate way, in a mundane way, we see Krishna consciousness. If I work really hard, I'm going to get there. And then what tends to happen as you go along like this is you don't get there. Because the journey is far further than you thought as an immature participant. And so as you don't get there, many, many questions arise. Many doubts arise. Many other things seem to tempt us, because now we're seeing, I thought this was going to be easy like that. It's not. Whew, I think I need a little bit of relaxation. I think I need a little bit of slowing down here, because I'm in first gear all the time. I need to just relax a little bit. And we relax a little bit, and lo and behold, in comes so many inputs. All sorts of things occur when we relax on our journey. We start looking out the window and saying, oh, that's interesting, maybe I should turn off here. If I'm in my vehicle, body is a vehicle, let me have a look at that, let me learn that, let me see that, and we find ourselves going this way and that way to both sides. If we're lucky. If we're not lucky, we turn the vehicle around and go back. So this is a real challenge for us as aspiring devotees, to understand that we haven't kind of yet taken off. We're sort of doing all the right things to attain what we will attain when we're really, really, really ready and serious to attain that. So for now, I'm following the rules and the regulations and the principles because it says so here in the scriptures. And as we heard, there's some genuine fear must be there. The fear isn't part of Krishna consciousness at all. It has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. The fear is there because of our tendency to not be yet able to comply in completely giving ourselves to Krishna. So the fear is a byproduct of our struggle. And when we get to the point where we understand, we conceptually understand the whole thing, then it becomes much, much easier to move forward in a natural way. Not a fast-paced, tense way, and not in a lackadaisical way, but it becomes common sense. We have to do this. Why would you want to be who you're not? When the whole point becomes clear to us, then our challenge becomes different. We're no longer fighting with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But then we're asking ourselves and others, how am I going to make progress? And so as you move forward in the journey, you tend to feel that I'm moving backwards in the journey. I'm seeing more problems. I'm seeing more faults in myself. I'm seeing more conditions of weakness. I'm seeing more helplessness than I did in the beginning. What's happening here? Am I moving forward or am I moving back? And it can be both or either. We may be moving back because we're no longer following strongly enough the practices of Krishna consciousness. Or it can be that we are following the practices, they don't seem to be working as well, because we're uncovering as we go the serious nature of the attachments that we feel to this world, and how binding they are, and how we alone cannot break them. We can't break them. We thought in the beginning, in 5 years, we'd have everything under control. And now we're starting to see, actually, I'm not capable of actually breaking these attachments. So this is a very healthy place to be in. It doesn't feel so pleasant, but it's a very healthy place to be. Because why? Why do you think it's a healthy place to be? It sounds an unhealthy place to be. Does anyone know?
Which place?
The place where you realize, I'm not making any advancement, I can't break my attachments, I can't do it. I've talked about it, I talk about it to others, I can't do it. Why is it a healthy place to be? It makes us more serious about the practice.
What else? Now you can take the actions, like you can improve.
We just said we can't improve. We're not seeming to improve. So if I say, now I'm going to improve. What else?
Makes us humble.
Makes us humble.
We can reach
more. We can reach out more. These are all correct. There's one particular thing that I think is really, really important to get to. Yes?
It makes us turn to Krishna.
Makes us turn to Krishna, yes. What do we turn to Krishna for?
Shelter,
help, what else?
Guidance.
Guidance, what else?
Surrender,
what else?
Mercy.
Mercy, yes. Who said that? Protection, yes. This was the word I was looking for, protection. Because all the others are also there, they're also correct. There's no incorrect or correct answer here. But protection is really important because you protect your children. Why do you protect your children instead of they protecting you? Because they can't protect you, right? They can't protect you. If they could protect you, then they should protect you. But they're children, they're young, they're immature. They can't protect you. And therefore, you look after them all the time to see, are they all right? A good parent does. And a bad parent may not, but we're speaking here about the exemplary parent. The parent looks after the child because the child is helpless. So we may feel in the beginning, I know how to take care of myself. Sometimes you see children who are like that. They're very independent. When you go to put their clothes on, they don't want those clothes. When you want to take them somewhere, they don't want to go there. When you tell them, hold my hand across the road, they don't want to hold your hand. They want to run. And so you watch them, you watch after them. You don't mind that they have a strong spirit. But you're watching after them, you're protecting them at a distance at all times because you know they're not as intelligent as they think they are. They're just children. So Krishna does like that with his devotees. He watches over them. He's always watching over us. Not only devotees, he's watching over everyone. But when the child who thinks they're so grown up, when they recognize I need somebody to protect me, then he steps forward very, very strongly. He steps forward because you have a need now. I'm always protecting you, but you don't see me because you don't have any need. You feel like I'm capable. Everything's going on nicely. So in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, often we feel like, I'm doing okay, everything's okay, I've got my systems in place and I'm being good. But when you come to the point where you realize that this conditioning, male, the danger of the female, the danger of the male, I'm so vulnerable. The Bhagavatam is saying, you're so vulnerable, look at you all. You're so vulnerable, you don't even realize how vulnerable you are. It's describing the flute. When the deer hunter is playing the flute, he's not thinking of the well-being of the deer. He's thinking of how he can lure the deer into a situation of great danger to his life. So when we realize I'm here in this material world, no one wants to think like this. It's not politically correct to talk like this. You're supposed to say, have a good time, you can do whatever you want, you just think of it, you can be it. There's so many slogans. The world is directing people towards a positive idea of what you can achieve by being materialistic. And Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam is saying the exact opposite. So how vulnerable are we also? We're only devotees to a certain depth. We're not thorough devotees like Srila Prabhupada, who was day and night sleeping and chanting. When he wasn't talking, he was chanting. And he wasn't doing it because he was frightened. He was doing it because he naturally loves Krishna in the same way that we naturally see each other and relate to each other as real. Yet look at the deities and see them as standing statically still. So we can pray to them, but we don't hear them answer us. And we can't sit down next to them and talk to them and ask them a whole bunch of things. We can't tell them everything on our mind. You know, I had a good day, I had a bad day, this is. We're not always supposed to stand like this before the deities. So the deities are there, but our family members are so much more dear to us. Isn't this a fact? Because we relate to them as people, we relate to the deities with respect and adoration and appropriateness. But the family, the people that are walking and talking, we relate to them more. So Srila Prabhupada is telling us, you have to shift that around the other way. You have to come to the point where you come into the temple room to see the deities, and you feel that you need to talk to them. And when there's any difficulty in your life, you go to the deities for help. And then, because you're going to them for protection, you'll be able to recognize whatever happens to you next as a reciprocation with them, because your attention was on them and not on my wife or my children or my family for my shelter, my oasis. And it doesn't mean that I neglect my wife or my family or my children. But in essence, in the core of us, we have to learn to go here for our shelter. And if we practice doing this from the very beginning of our exposure to Krishna consciousness, it slowly becomes a mechanical, not in a negative sense, it becomes a habit. And habits are good or bad. A good habit is very good, but a bad habit is very unfortunate. Because it's very hard to break habits. So our sadhana bhakti is meant to be creating habits. Habits, I do this, this is what I do, I don't do this. And our thinking is meant to go along with that, gradually, gradually, bringing our mind. And it's easier to bring your body than to bring your mind. Am I correct? We can bring our body here, but to bring our mind here and keep it here is a greater challenge. And so therefore, all of our shastric injunctions start with bring your body. Engage your body. Engage your body. And if we say, my mind is running everywhere, then we say, you try to engage your mind as well. Try to engage your mind as well. Knowing that, as Arjuna himself said, the mind is so restless and obstinate, and to control it, it seems like trying to control the wind. But Srila Prabhupada is like a deep, deep, or a high, high mountain, or a deep, deep anchor to the truth. So even before we can really do it, he insists that we hear it, and hear it, and hear it. And by this hearing, although we're incompatible with these principles initially, gradually they also become firmly instilled in our thinking. And when the thinking and the body are aligned towards what is actually real, as I said before, then there comes a type of peace that is what we're all actually eager for and searching for in all kinds of individual ways. that are not actually going to work because they're born of the false ego, the false identification, I'm a woman, the false identification, I'm a man, and the conflict and interactions that go on between them. So this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada is speaking particularly about attachment. Attachment to Krishna. It is a question of attachment. A man becomes attached to a woman, he's speaking here of why, and a woman becomes attached to a man, he's explaining why. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna conscious and the marriage is very nice. So my question is always, has always been, I'm afraid, because it's not easy to take up Krishna consciousness when you've been born into this world with a host of material desires. With the impetus from your previous lives has taken you to this point, and by Srila Prabhupada's mercy or devotee's mercy or coming in touch with devotees, you've been like redirected up, but still the impetus to do the things of this world is still not yet completely gone. So I always am looking for, what do I do about the part that doesn't want to do what you're telling me to do? What do I do about that part? Does anyone else have this problem? Yes? One, two, three. What do I do about the part that doesn't want to do it? This has always been my question. In fact, I won't go into it, but with my husband we used to have a kind of a running, irritating, sarcastic joke, which is where he would say to me something, and then he would say, mimicking me, what do I do if I can't do it? Because Srila Prabhupada said, do it. And I would say, what do I do if I can't do it? And so he was like, don't say it. Don't say that. I don't want to hear you say that again. So I'd go, and inside I'm saying, what do I do if I can't do it? And so then I started saying, well, I'm going to find out what I can do if I can't do it. And so I would read with that in mind, because all the statements of the Bhagavatam are fixed. So I can't break any of them. The Bhagavatam says it's like this, so I can't tell myself it's not like this, it's like this. So I have to accept that, but then I fall in down here. So this part here is my challenge. And I always found it very interesting when I read about anything to do with protection. Because it seemed like until, and then I started to think, okay, so I must be like a child who's growing up, and I see good parents, they're always taking care of the child, so Krishna must be better than a good parent, so he must be there to take care of me, and I must learn to sort of recognize that in my infancy, and in my clumsiness, and in my inability to follow the highest principle of thought, I must be looking for Krishna all around where he's taking care of me. So one of my habits, and my husband suggested, when you read a very sobering verse like this, you're free to talk about anything you want, just to balance up the sober nature of this Bhagavatam verse. So I said, one of my habits is to look on folio or Vedabase and just put in any words. And because we have access here in our English-speaking countries to the Vedabase of all that Srila Prabhupada ever said. So I like to just put a word in and see what Srila Prabhupada says about that. And he'll say many things. Sometimes he says the same thing over and over. And sometimes he says something a little different. Sometimes he uses an English word in a kind of a really quaint way. That's very charming, and it just catches my mind, which is rebellious or stubborn at that moment, and brings it back into that sense of connectedness with Krishna in the present, as well as, of course, ultimately in the highest ideal. So last night I did that. And I was reading Srila Prabhupada's lectures particularly. And somebody asked him, so I think these quotes are nice because they give us this encouragement to step forward even when we know that we're incompetent. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, is it possible for us to worship Krishna purely in this lifetime? Now one thing you should know about Srila Prabhupada is that it was scary to ask him a question. Unless you were brand new, then it was okay. But once you had ever asked him a question, you learned that it was scary to ask him a question because he would say, you didn't know what. He would not just answer in a yes, no, pleasant fashion. He could turn the question upon you, like you would turn a light and expose the person's intentions, ulterior intentions even, in asking such a doubtful question. He could become as if indignant that you would have that you would think in that way. I remember one other senior personality who I met one time, a friend of Srila Prabhupada's, and he, when you asked him a question, he would sometimes say, I have never thought like that in my life. And he would be reduced to size accordingly. So we would come with a question, it's a very important question, and Srila Prabhupada would reduce it. Once he said to my husband and I, when he was staying here in Elwood in 1974, we came into his room, he was staying at one devotee's house, he had moved out. And Srila Prabhupada had just woken up from his sleep. And he looked at my husband and he said, they write me saying, dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my humble obeisances. I have this big problem. Then he paused, sort of standing there. Yes. He says, if they are so humble, how can they have a big problem? Zip. So somebody has asked Srila Prabhupada, is it possible for us to worship Krishna purely in this lifetime? He replies, why not? Do you think we are simply wasting our time with this process? Do you think? So this is, he's talking to me right now. I have found this, and he's talking to me. He's helping me out by what he's saying to him. Why lifetime? Within a second you can do. This was interesting. He said, it is a spiritual process. It is not a material process that requires so much time. Doesn't that leave you thinking? It is a spiritual process. Not a material process that requires so much time. 3 years university degree. 10 years become a doctor. 5 years, get this. 7 years become that. On and on and on and on. Your whole life can be mapped out in little achievements. But Krishna consciousness is not a material process. It can happen in a second. So that leaves me thinking, well, what am I doing then? What am I doing? How am I thinking about Krishna consciousness? What's my mind done with my practice? Has it made it into it? Every day I do this, this, and this. Am I missing something? And the answer always is yes. You're missing Krishna. And if you can just wake up for a minute, you'll realize it. So Prabhupada says, it requires simply the spiritual technique to know how you can develop Krishna attachment. The whole formula is, you have to develop your attachment for Krishna. No more. Nothing more. That's all right. So this is excerpts from that particular answer. He spoke more on the subject. But that struck me. Suddenly it draws your attention back to what is the essence of what you're supposed to be doing. And you see that all the problems come from the waylaying of your consciousness into all the other things. But we can still also ask, but I have so many services to do, I don't have time to think deeply, we can ask so many questions. But Prabhupada is saying, in 1 second you can do it. So am I assessing my position wisely and rightly? He said, if you are serious, it can be done within a second. If you are not serious about it, it cannot be done in many lives. So it depends on your serious nature. So then we can say, what if I'm a frivolous person? What if I'm not a serious person? Am I barred? Is it hopeless for me? I'm not a focused person like that. So somebody also asked Srila Prabhupada, how do you know when you've attained Krishna consciousness? A good question. And Prabhupada says, nobody can certify him. You don't need a certification. Oh, you've attained Krishna consciousness. Stamp on your head. Nobody certifies you. He will certify himself. If you have only attachment for Krishna, you are in samadhi. If you have only attachment for Krishna, you are in samadhi. You must develop attachment for Krishna. Now this is a very nice song. You must develop attachment for Krishna under his protection. Under his protection. Now this is so important because some of the absolute statements which are absolutely correct, we may find, what do you do if you can't do it? And so Krishna is here with us saying, I will help you to do it. I'm never indifferent to your plight. But if you don't turn to me, you won't recognize that I'm helping you already. And you won't recognize where to put your foot next and next and next so that your progress will be fast. In fact, you might be walking around in a circle. So you need my protection. So Prabhupada says, like a friend protects his friend, or like a master protects his servant, or a father protects his child, or a lover protects their lover. Similarly, there must be some protectional element. You have to take shelter of Krishna in either of these aspects. And you have to develop your attachment for either of these aspects. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking in San Francisco in 1968 to people who had just months before given up all kinds of drug addiction and misbehavior. And he's speaking to them right away. You must develop your relationship with Krishna. Here are these 5 different ways you can develop a relationship with Krishna. Choose one, develop, and you can become successful. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. He's not saying, okay, first you have to go through this proprietary course 1, then when you get your degree, we'll take you to course 2, level 3, level 4, level 5. He's saying it's not a material process. You can go there quickly if you want. So then, for me, the question becomes a different one. It becomes, how am I going to increase my desire? Instead of, I can't do it, what do you do if you can't do it? It becomes, how am I going to increase my desire to do this? And again, the same thing applies. Ask the question internally as well as externally, because you have a friend already traveling with you, willing to help you. This is Srila Prabhupada's words are like this. This is not imagination. This is not somebody's interpretation. This is what Srila Prabhupada himself came to explain. You have a friend, a guide, a master. Turn inward. Ask Krishna or ask the deities if you require the presence of the deity form, which is absolutely beneficial and essential. But what do you do when you're outside? When you're at work, then what do you do? You can, if you're very expert and wonderfully so, you can meditate on the deity form. But even if you can't do that, you can still turn to Krishna from within and watch and see what he does to protect you. And the standard answer, not the practitioner's answer, the answer of how you do it, the Shastric answer is association. You have to get good association. But how do I do that? The personalized question will still follow. Where, how, what? And so Krishna will say, do this, follow here, go there. He will arrange, and it's thrilling to live your life like that. It makes everything else look so unfortunate, what people are doing to themselves. It looks so unfortunate. Because they're asleep, they're like dead, they're like ghostly haunted. And only by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada can he wake up this within us. And when he wakes this up within us, then we realize what he has come to give. And he wants to give this to the whole world. Not just to stop with a small community, although the small community are dear to him. But the small community are meant to increase into a larger community and a larger community and a larger community. And not only people who are fortunate enough to be born in India, whose responsibility it is to give Krishna consciousness to the rest of the world, but also all nationalities, all races, all people, because internally there's no difference, we're all souls. So it's possible. And when we live in that sense, it's not because I can do it that I'm confident. It's because I have my father with me and he can do it. Srila Prabhupada uses an example when he was when he had a young son. And he was on the bus in Calcutta. And one of the ticket collectors came over and he was playing with the boy. And he said, where's your ticket? And the little boy said, I don't have a ticket. So the bus driver said, the tram driver, what he said, you'll have to get off the bus. And he said, no, I have my father with me. So we want to become like that. We need to become like that. And as we become like that, we want to share that understanding with whomsoever we can. Because they also should become like that. So Prabhupada said, with everything else we have a relationship. He was saying, we have a relationship with our house. Yes. We have a relationship with our body. We have a relationship with the country that we're born in. We have a relationship with our work. We have a relationship with nature. We have a relationship with the sky. We have a relationship with everything. So he said, with everything we have a relationship. Why not with God? Why not with God? It is not that you have got a relation. It's not that you have got no relationship with God, and we are artificially forcing something. No, you have. Simply by hearing and cultivating this, hearing something and trying to do something with it, that means cultivating it. Simply by hearing and cultivating this knowledge, you revive it. And then, just like in the matches, there is fire. If you don't take protection of Krishna, you cannot develop attachment to him. If you don't take his protection, you won't develop attachment. So, I'll stop here with these thoughts, these words from Srila Prabhupada when he was speaking and traveling and encouraging and enlightening the devotees while he was physically present with us, that echo and reverberate on into the future and future generations for the benefit of all humanity. Thank you. Does anyone have any concert questions that they would like to ask, either about this very sub-verse or other points? Yes.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
You told about coming in contact with the deities, getting in front of them, accosting them,
yes,
and then sharing our problems with them.
Yes.
So what is the mood one should have when meet the deities at home, or the photos of the deities at home, or when you come, so what's the relationship you should share? Because a thing had happened, an incident of the days back. I had this habit of waving goodbye to the deities, right? Sometimes spontaneously I was reading something and I felt quite attached to the deities and then just went going and just waved goodbye to the deities. They said that you should not get, someone just told me that you should not get too friendly with the deities because they are our masters and then you might not take their instructions very seriously.
Yes. This is a very good point. When we come in front of the deities, we have to learn etiquette. Because why? Because as you just said, because if you become over familiar when you approach the deities, you won't take them very seriously. You think they're like my friends, and I don't always listen to my friends. But actually we begin our devotional process in the mood of a servant. So you ask the question, what is the proper way to formulate your prayers? And I would recommend for you that you read prayers from the Bhagavatam. And many of them you might not be able to relate to because they're somebody else's prayers. But if you look for prayers, if you make the attempt and look for prayers, you will find one or two great personalities who have offered prayers that you can relate to. And when you can take a prayer that a great person has prayed, even though you don't have the depth that they have, when you offer that prayer, it's more or less that you're offering, this is one type of prayer, praying, you offer the prayer as if you say, as Prahlad Maharaj prayed, and you pray. And what happens is it's making an impression in you. Prahlad Maharaj, it's like as if he's standing there and you're standing behind and you're listening to him pray. And so then that prayer becomes an impression on your consciousness. And then gradually it becomes, if you continue to pray in a certain way, it becomes yours. Because now you can hold that meaning for yourself. So there are different kinds of prayers, and one kind of prayer is like that, where we offer prayers strictly according to what we have read. And it's a wonderful way to enter into the Bhagavatam, is to find prayers. If you're one of these high-tech people that are not, you look in the database and look at prayers, and you'll find so many prayers. That's one thing. There's another kind of prayer that comes from our neediness. It's a personal prayer. Please help me with this, please help me with that. Those prayers should first of all be preceded by, in a natural way, some glorification of Krishna before we don't say, oh, please help me, I can't get up today. We do internally sometimes pray like that also, but that's a very informal form of prayer, which is not the one that we're speaking of here. In front of the deities, we try to first say something to glorify them. You're so merciful, you have always been so merciful to me. You're so full of, you look so beautiful today. I mean, I'm talking simply here, but you look so beautiful, and I've heard this, and so forth. And then you offer your prayer. And there's a discipline in doing that that is necessary. In the beginning, you must develop a discipline. Otherwise, you'll be too informal and you will never get the appropriateness to be able to serve correctly. And then as the relationship it becomes more and more consistent, then naturally those things have been imbibed more, and so the prayer has them already contained within it. But in the beginning you must learn the discipline. Disciplines are there in Krishna consciousness, and they're wonderful disciplines actually. They will purify you and make you very strong. Okay?
But I thought the level of formality you share with the deities or things, you might not be able to express your intrinsic feelings.
You do after some time, but right now our intrinsic feelings are self-centered. So if I was to express and use my intrinsic feelings in the beginning, I'd be saying, help, you know, I don't, this person offended me, I don't like this person, I want to go home, I don't know. There are many, many things, like a child, if you ask them to offer a prayer, they'll offer something that won't be grounded in truth. So your feelings in the beginning aren't grounded in truth. Right? So our feelings need also to come along a bit. So that's why the discipline is there in the beginning, when we most feel we don't want it, because we'd rather offer our prayers from our heart. And Krishna is saying, no, no, find some form first. Do this appropriately. Learn something. You will learn, you will benefit from that. And the feelings won't be lost. And Krishna won't avoid you, and it won't become a formal cold process, but you will know how to act appropriately and pray appropriately.
Thank you, Maharaj, for this class. My question is, you know, how you mentioned about that, you know, that how do you do if you can't do it?
Yes.
And then seeking the protection and taking the guidance and associating with devotees. But how do we deal with the mentality of, you know, indifference, you know, being very apathetic?
That's a very difficult thing to deal with, is indifference. Indifference, apathy, don't care. There's a word for that, another word. Any other word that comes into that basket? Indifference, what is it? Anything similar, a word?
Negligence,
yes. Anything else?
Insensitive.
Apathetic.
Give them prasadam.
No. Sorry, I'm thinking of a particular word that I was hoping maybe somebody else would mention that is in that, that means the same thing. One time I met a devotee from England, and he's a very nice devotee, worked very hard, and every year they have a big Janmashtami, a huge Janmashtami. And so for months and months in advance, he was one of the main organizers. And as a result of his organization, which was vast, even beyond anything that you would see here, and I know Janmashtami is huge in Melbourne, but they have acres and acres of land as well that they organize in, and a huge community. So it's probably 10 times more intense than Melbourne. So he was one of the organizers, and he said as the Janmashtami draws nearer, his rounds seem to reduce in quality or in size. And then he said, and the word I thought it started with a C, I can't remember the word, but it was like apathy or indifference.
Contempt.
He said, huh?
Contempt.
Contempt, no, that's even a little bit active. It's like a sort of a who cares mood. Complacency, that's it. He said, then what happens is, I work so hard, and then I find out I've become complacent. And I was listening to him because I was thinking, oh, this is interesting. So then he said, then I developed the disease of complacency. So then later, when I had an opportunity, because the words had struck me, I said to him, what do you do for this, why do you call it a disease first? Then he said, because I have no interest in doing anything. When that comes, that stage, I just have no, don't care about my chanting, don't care about anything. So it's like apathy, right? It may be even a little worse, complacency. And so I said to him, what do you do? He said, well, For me, what I have to do, and I don't know if he still does this, but at the time he said, my solution is that after I finish this very intense period of service, I take 2 weeks off. And I was like, 2 weeks off? What do you do? He said, I go somewhere. And he had the opportunity to do this, but the principle remains. And he said, and I read and I read and I read and I read until I start coming alive again. So he considered it like a plague, and he had a remedy for it. So everyone may have their own way that they deal with apathy or complacency. But complacency or apathy is probably the worst disease in spiritual life of any. Almost worse, indifference is almost worse than anger. I don't like Krishna. Krishna's so mean, he's so horrible. Because Narada Muni in the sixth canto, he glorifies Kamsa for his enmity towards Krishna, because he says there's no more intense meditation on somebody than when you're angry with them. Right? You just think of some time when somebody has crossed your path and you didn't like them, or they did something to you that you can't get rid of it. It's always coming back into your mind, right? Right? Everyone's had that experience, I'm sure. But when you don't care, who cares? That's really hard to deal with. So that's one suggestion that one devotee gave me as advice. If you were going to ask what to do about apathy, it's a difficult one. But we have to become like doctors, like what's her name? Nirmala Krishna is a homeopathic doctor. So you go to her and you say, oh, I'm having a headache. And she'll ask you all the symptoms, where, what is it like, whatever. And then she will prescribe you some medication. And she has all the paraphernalia to do that. She has the little pills. She has all the little things that you mix with the pills. She has all the little bottles. She has all the caps. She has all of that. And when you tell her your complaint, she mixes it up and gives it to you. So we need to become like that with ourselves. That I take care of myself. When I'm apathetic, I've got to take care of that. And we will say, how can I take care of it because I'm apathetic? And the answer is, you have to take care of it because you can die of that disease. So if somebody comes to her and says, listen, I've got cancer. I've had it for a long time now. I don't want to do anything about it. It's sort of floating around in my body. The doctor immediately says, you have to do something about that. You can't be apathetic, right? You can't just say, oh, I'm going to have a heart attack. You can't do that. That's not sane. So similarly, when I see I'm not doing very well, I have to have these different ways from my training and experience of what I do when I'm feeling like that. And that's Krishna consciousness, where I'm storing things. And we may think I'm not storing anything, but we are. We're storing impressions all the time. Then we have to use them. And as we use them, they become very active within us. You have a question?
Hare Krishna, Madhav.
Hare Krishna.
Just one comment. Nitya Siddhi Krishna Prema, so that in every heart, the love of Krishna.
Yes.
So what we do, association.
What?
Association is the most important thing.
Yes.
And then comes sincerity.
Yes.
So if we come to the right association and then follow the instruction of the spiritual master, it's very easy to get love of God.
Thank you. You're going to bless us all, Mahatma Prabhu? Thank you. This is the answer. But because we're talking now as people who are, as devotees who are trying to improve.
Yeah.
We're putting aside the absolute. Yeah. And we're trying to work out how do I bring myself up a bit. But yes, thank you for reminding us.
Hare
Krishna. Yes.
I just had a thought. But in regards to this complacency, because I'm trying to analyze myself as I'm listening to you, and I've recently had a spout of that. Well, I
Yeah, you're familiar with it.
Yes, I was going through something that was confusing me. Now I've got a word for it.
Yeah.
So, and I just realized in listening, because when we understand in Krishna consciousness that two things are required, isn't it? That it's our endeavor.
Yes.
And the mercy of the Lord.
Yes.
So when you told this story of this Prabhu, you know, the Janmasthami festival, immediately my mind was thinking, well, he made such an endeavor, then why the complacency? And I'm immediately analyzing myself, I'm thinking, well, it's such an endeavor, but why complacency then as a result, you know? And I'm just sort of thinking, because I endeavored with an expectation, even subconsciously, I might be speaking. I mean, I'm just sharing my own realization here for a minute. And I'm endeavoring in a particular way, and I'm maybe even like Prabhu's talking about prayers and like that, and I might even be speaking, you know, very lofty.
Speaking the prayers.
Speaking many things.
Yes.
But what's really happening inside? And why am I endeavoring?
Yes.
And then Krishna might give his mercy. But not in the way that we wanted or expected.
Yes, that's a
but
very
endeavoring towards
point.
To.
Yes.
And so then I'm like, oh,
yes.
Well, I give up.
This is a very.
I tried really hard,
yeah.
And I'm exhausted, and well, no, that's it. I'm done.
I can't do this anymore. It's not bringing anything.
It's
either me or him. He's busy with all the other people who are praying. So anyway, let me do it myself. that's a really a very, very nice point. I had somebody also was telling me that I pray, and they said it in a very derogatory way, a bad tempered way. I pray, but Krishna is intermittent in his responses. That's what you mean. And they said, well, sometimes something happens and most times nothing happens. So I said, well, if you say to Krishna, for example, you know, please help me to know whether I should change my job. I mean, a very ordinary thing. And you get some immediate, somebody rings you up with a new job. You know, you think, oh, Krishna, you've made it all clear to me. But if nobody rings you up and nothing happens, you say, well, he didn't hear me. So I said, hang on, he's allowed to say no. He's allowed to say no. So you're wanting him to say yes. But he's one, he wants to say no. And so you're saying, where is it you didn't give it to me? I didn't want you to have it. It wasn't good for you. And so then that really, that person, I remember like a light went on in their head. I said, he's saying no to you.
You don't expect no.
You expect yes. Give, like a child. So then we understand, oh, I'm still very childish. I'm still very young. I'm still very immature because I expect, please give me this and give me this and fix this and do this and so on and make it very clear to me this. If we think like that, of course there are some amongst us who are highly advanced and aren't thinking in this way. But I must admit that it sometimes overpowers me to think in that way. To please organize my life, be like an organizer. What do they call that? A PA. And then I think, this doesn't seem right. And that's Krishna's mercy, when all of a sudden it comes in your mind, I don't think I'm doing the right thing here. It doesn't quite feel right. And then let me go for the protection. Can you help me to understand this properly? Can you help me to properly understand how I should approach you? Because I think I might be not doing it right. I might be asking you to serve me. And so I really need to turn it around the other way and ask, could you find something that someone as stupid as me could do? I mean, other people might think I'm fine, but I know the truth about the situation. You know the truth about the situation. Could you find something for me to do? And sometimes no answer. He says, no. No, think about it a little longer. Become a little deeper in your understanding. You're superficial. Become a little more serious. And then when I'm least expecting it, because I have the tendency to ask him to serve me, so now I'm saying, oh, Hare Krishna, please you can serve me at my Krishna consciousness. No, And then, oh, and then I feel very sorry for myself. And then when I'm not asking in the wrong way, which if you reward bad behavior, it becomes a bad habit. When I'm not asking, I'm feeling very fallen, but I'm kind of like, oh, then he may come in and do something. Because I'm not, he's not reinforcing my bad habit, which is to use him as my provider, instead of me as his servant. So some opportunity comes and all of a sudden I go, oh wow, where did that come from? And I'm revived again, and moving again. So he, Krishna is so merciful. He's not stereotyped. And he's immensely personal to each one of us. But what he's wanting for us is that we come to the platform of reality. Not that we introduce him to our unreality and ask him to sort it all out for us. So this, I always, is one of the medicines you should have, one of the understanding. Check this, am I doing this or am I doing that? And as you practice in this way, you begin to pick it up yourself. I think this is not feeling right. And then we go before the deities and say, I'm very sorry, I'm doing this again. I keep doing this. I can't help it, but please protect me and guide me right. Because in essence, what would be the use of being a devotee for so many hours and years of your life and end up in the wrong place? What would be the gain of that? I've got to get to the right place after all this hard work, or I'm a real fool. I'm a worse fool than all the people outside who are fooled, because I'm inside and I'm acting like them here. So I'm a bigger fool than them. So please, you have to protect me, you have to help me. I have to learn to see your hand. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I'm never lost and he's never lost to me. Krishna says this, I want to get to the point where I can realize that, where that's my level of consciousness. But I'm not there now. So please help me to move towards that point. Then I'll be able to really serve. Any other questions? Thank you so much for being such active listeners. We have a question in the front. Yes.
Which Vishnu creates the universe?
Which Vishnu creates the universe? Yes? Who's going to be our expert teacher here? We have one young student in your midst. Which Vishnu creates the universe? Mahatma, please.
What is the question?
Which Vishnu creates the universe?
Mahavishnu creates the universe.
Yes.
Then how is Brahman the creator?
How is Brahman created? Brahman is the rays, the light that comes from his body.
Brahma.
How is Brahma created?
No, how come he is the creator?
How come Brahma is the creator? He's called the secondary creator. That means just like say, I go out and I create, I make a lot of, I can't think of something. Because you see, I don't make the wood, right? Okay, we'll do it like this. If I say I'll bring a lot of wood here and you can build a house, did you create the wood? Did you create the house?
The house.
Did you make the house? If you build a house, did you make the house? If I give you some wood and say build a house and you build a house, did you build the house? He's so pure. He sees Krishna everywhere. You became the creator of the house, but you didn't make the wood. Right? You made the house, but you didn't make the wood. So you can say, who made the house? And I would say, you made the house. But if I said, who made the wood? I wouldn't say, you made the wood. Right? Do you understand? So Lord Brahma makes the house, But Vishnu makes the wood. All the ingredients, all the things in the creation are made by Lord Mahavishnu. And then they all come to Lord Brahma and he puts them together and he makes the world. So he helps. So they're both said to be creators. But the real, real, real creator is? Does that answer your question? Do you have any more questions? That was a very good question. Very intelligent question. Thank you for sitting up here and asking such a good question. Thank you. All right. If we have no more questions.
There's one question here.
Oh, okay, yes.
Until you were mentioning about attachment, you have to beg Krishna for protection, then you get attachment. And we also see how there are four different people who approach Krishna out of fear.
Yes.
And fear is when you ask for protection, yes. And that is considered as a much lower level.
Yes.
So then how do we understand, how do we raise from the platform of being fearful and asking for protection? Being naturally.
Naturally. Fear is okay. Fear should be there. It's like with a child. If I told him, he's already so intelligent, it wouldn't be a problem. But if you had a little child, here's a little child here, you might say, don't go out on the road by yourself. Don't go out on the road. There are cars that go like this, and you're not very, very good at seeing them. You might make a mistake, and you'll get squashed by the car. So in the beginning, we might tell the little child that. And as they grow naturally, they will start to be able to identify all their cars on the road and they'll be acting appropriately. And their fear will go away because they won't be giving that instruction anymore. Be fearful, be fearful. But in the beginning, as a young devotee, these verses will sound fearful to us. One part of us, the part that's materialistic, will feel these verses as very fearful. And the part of us that's learning to love Krishna will see, oh no, this is not fearful because I don't have that attachment anymore. So fear is there. It's a necessary gift of Krishna, the fear, when we have the strong attachment to this world. And as that decreases, that will decrease naturally. Okay. Thank you again. Hare Krishna.